Welcome, Fear Fiction fans, to another thrilling episode of the Long Box of Darkness, your nocturnal refuge of chilling horror lore. I'm your host, Herm, speaking to you from beyond the crypt of comic book chaos, nestled within the cobwebs of our spooky little studio over here. And on this episode, we'll be delving into the dark corners of the graphic paneled world yet again. That's right, we're back to horror comics, where the eerie and the empowered reside. As many of you might be aware, in March, we celebrate Women of Horror Month. That's right. So because of that, I've decided to drag you all along on a little journey into an episode I've decided to call Mistresses of the Macabre, 20 gloriously ghoulish gals that make comics worth reading. So today we shall unmask the brave, the bold, the beautiful, possibly the bizarre as well, and celebrate these heroines who haunt the pages and panels we so love, and who have left their bloody fingerprints all over the horror genre. So let's get ready, dim the lights, tune in your ears, and join me as we embark on a little trek into the realm of fear and femme fatales. But before we properly kick things off, it's important to note that these lethal ladies that I've included on my list are not ranked in any particular order. They're simply my personal favorites, and I fully acknowledge that there will be countless other remarkable characters in the horror genre that I've left off the list. You'll just have to forgive me for that. And if you want to leave feedback or your own opinions or criticism, you're welcome to do so. Just send an email to contact@darklongbox.com. Or you could read along with this episode by visiting our blog at darklongbox.com. And there will be a post that features this transcript of this episode as a full article. And of course, there will be lots of images included there of the sultry seductresses we'll be discussing today. And I'll feature your comments on the next episode, so please feel free to drop me a line at the blog or by sending an email to contact@darklongbox.com. All right, with that out of the way, we're about ready to dive in. Here we go. Standing at number 20 on the list, we've got the girl next door of the gothic world. She's an endless entity that we all know and love and begrudgingly acknowledge as inevitable. And who is she? If you don't know by now, she's Death. That's right, Death from the DC Universe, specifically the Sandman comic book universe created by Neil Gaiman. And she had her very own spin-off series in the 1990s, two in fact, that were both collected as neat little graphic novels, Death, The Time of Your Life, and Death, The High Cost of Living, both worth reading. And don't be fooled by her cheerful demeanor, though. She's quirky, she wears an Ankh necklace, fashionably pale complexion, all of that. But remember, she's the holder of the keys to life's ultimate checkout lane, so be wary. And in an arena where the Grim Reaper is usually depicted as, well, just grim, she breaks the mold a bit. She's very unique. She's definitely the friendliest face in the afterlife. She's comforting. She's reassuring. She makes the end of life seem more like a beginning of sorts. So she's kind of the cool older sister everyone wishes they had. Or, well, in my case, I actually did have a cool older sister. But she's the older sister of the Sandman, of Morpheus. And she was brought to life by the artistic talents of people such as Sam Keith and Mike Dringenberg. They designed her signature look. And of course, Neil Gaiman, the master of modern mythology, conceived her. So Death, definitely a singular character in comic books. All right, that's our number 20 on the list. Now let's move to number 19, another diva of darkness. She first sashayed her way from the small screen into the comic book universe in the mid-1980s, and she's been a cult TV icon or a horror icon since her debut in 1981. But she made her first comic book appearance in DC Comics' House of Mystery, Volume 2. And if you don't know who I'm talking about, well, you should, if you've listened to previous episodes of The Long Box of Darkness. This is Elvira, our beloved Mistress of the Dark, known for her iconic hairdo, razor-sharp wit, her curves that scream, va-va-voom, and she's the queen of horror in many ways. So, starting off in the second volume of House of Mystery, she replaced Kane, Volume 1's horror host, and the series lasted for about 16 issues, if I'm not mistaken, and kept the same horror anthology format, but of course with Elvira's signature charm and campy wit thrown in for good measure. And she's since appeared in new modern comics as well, of course shepherded by, well, Cassandra Peterson, the lady who is Elvira, who created her. And she makes sure that Elvira's look and signature double entendres are kept firmly in place in the comics. So a unique character when it comes to all mediums of horror, but especially in the comic books that I so loved reading in the 1980s, I just had to mention her on this list. All right, so now let's move on to number 18, another DC Comics dame. She's a spellbinding sensation, hailing from, I'd say, Arthurian mythology. Yes, that's right. Her origins are steeped in the lore of Camelot. And, of course, she's DC's, well, go-to sorceress, I guess, unless you count Zatanna. And I'm not talking about Zatanna here, by the way. She's more superhero-y. But this dame that I'm talking about is the sultry, the lovely Madame Xanadu. Madame Xanadu, to many of you. So her real name, Nimue Inwudu, as she's known in her Camelot guise from way back when. She was a contemporary of Merlin, and she went from medieval sorcery to kind of like a swinging 60s psychic phase. She's always had her foot in the, one foot at least, in the arcane and another one in the quirky curiosity shop. And yeah, she's been around for quite a while. But what's her speciality? I'd say she's, you know, known in her comic book series as providing supernatural solutions to those in need. And of course, she holds at bay those pesky forces that threaten to go bump in the night. And her series usually explore adventures and misadventures in magic. And that's why, you know, I'm all for it. She's sort of like a female... Well, I mean, she's not on the power level of someone like Dr. Fate or over at Marvel, Doctor Strange. She's more of a guide, yeah, through these sorcerous realms. And who were the brains behind this ageless beauty? Yeah, did I mention she's immortal? I guess that goes without saying, since she's been around since the time of King Arthur. Well, she was created by the talented David Michelinie and artist Val Myrick from Man-Thing fame over at Marvel. So a great creative duo that gave life to Madame Xanadu. And she needs to be on every female horror comic character list. All right, so number 18, Madame Xanadu. Let's move right along to number 17. And this is another lady who's, of course, turning heads, especially as she appears on covers. But she doesn't just turn heads, she rips out hearts frequently. And I would describe her as hailing from the Evil Ernie universe, even though she preceded Evil Ernie story-wise. I think I first discovered her when I had read Evil Ernie, loved it, and explored more of that universe, and happened upon this woman called Lady Death. All right, so Lady Death, with her bone-white skin, waterfall of silver hair, her wardrobe that screams heavy metal goddess, she's the living, or should I say undead, embodiment of every headbanger's daydream, I'm sure. So she's a femme fatale worth mentioning. She's not just a pretty face. She's commanded armies in celestial battles. She's adorned comic book covers with her alluring figure and devilish charm, making her a standout So she's fierce, fiery, but sadly forever out of reach. So her journey began in Lady Death the Reckoning, if I recall that storyline. And of course she was created by Brian Pulido and Steve Hughes. And she's a force of nature. And how could you not love her? She's a badass character, which definitely cements her spot on this list without question. So Lady Death at number 17. Moving on to number 16. We'll turn the spotlight to a series featuring a heroine who is not your run-of-the-mill kind of character. She's an investigative journalist. So she's a go-getter. And she is the main character of a comic book series called Clean Room by Gail Simone and John Davis Hunt. Yeah, John Davis Hunt. And her name is Chloe Pierce. So I've included her on this list because I absolutely fell in love with this character when I read this series way back. I think it's almost a decade old by now. And she was published by Vertigo, which is the sub-imprint of DC Comics we mentioned before. Clean Room is a mind-bending cocktail of psychological terror and the supernatural. And Chloe, this investigative journalist, she's investigating her fiance's mysterious suicide. She dives headfirst into this rabbit hole, and she targets this enigmatic cult and run by this self-help guru called Astrid Muller, and this foundation, the Honest World Foundation. So there's a mystery there, conspiracy, lots of cults, just the way we like it. So she finds herself wrestling with these horrors that lurk beneath the surface of reality. It becomes slightly Lovecraftian, but with a very psychedelic flair to the whole tale. So definitely a series worth checking out just for the chilling conspiracy that is very unique among as comic book storylines go. Definitely a great character. Chloe Pierce at number 16. Now, let's move to number 15. So if you thought your inner demons were a handful, listeners, then wait until you meet number 15 on the list. This is a lady from a series called Monstrous, and her name is Micah Half-Wolf. So she's the main character, the heroine of this series, and created by Marjorie Liu and Sana Takeda. Sana Takeda, who's an amazing artist. It's fantasy art you wouldn't believe, but if many of you have seen the series, you know what I mean. But I will be featuring images on the blog, so hop on over there and check it out. It's stunning stuff. So Micah Half-Wolf's journey is kind of like a roller coaster ride through an early 20th century Asian-inspired matriarchal world. It's filled with breathtaking views and heart-stopping horror, courtesy of Takeda's fantastic art. And Micah's part of this magical race called the Arcanics, and they're at war with this witch tribe, or should I say witch governments, this witchocracy. What would you call it? Witchtocracy. It's these witches who hate these monsters and exterminate them, and they're in the midst of this war. So Micah, what sets her apart from your average heroine? Well, she has this rather large problem. She has a monster living inside her, a monster named Zin. And we're not talking about the kind of like, I eat too much chocolate cake kind of monster here. No. This is not all in her mind. This is not a psychological monster. This is a real, actual, terrifying Lovecraftian entity that resides within her mind, her soul, her body, all of the above. And it's an Eisner Award and Hugo Award winning series. So a delicious blend of horror and fantasy. And of course, exquisite storytelling thanks to Marjorie Liu. So you got to check this out if you haven't yet. Monstrous from Image Comics. Okay, so that is number 15 on the list. Micah Half-Wolf. Let's move on to number 14. So are you ready to meet our favorite brain-craving, crime-solving, totally relatable zombie chick? Well, then say hello to Olivia Moore, also known as Liv Moore. She's the undead protagonist from Vertigo again, DC Comics, and the series is called iZombie, which features her as the main character. iZombie from Mike Allred and Chris Roberson, featuring fantastic art, of course, which Mike Allred is known for. So Liv, she's a zombie you'd, I guess, actually want to invite over for a latte or something. Just make sure, yeah, that it's decaf and brain-free on your part, at least. She'll appreciate that, though, if you include that in hers. So what's her history? Liv was once a promising medical resident, but her life took a complete 180 after an unfortunate encounter at a zombie-infested boat party. So talk about a real dead man's party. She was suddenly, well, she found her as, herself as parts of the ranks of the undead, part of the ranks of the undead. So what could she do? Well, she's resourceful, and she gets a job at the morgue so that she can keep her new diet of brains on the down low. And of course, there was a TV show as well. I watched it, I loved it, but the comic book still remains my favorite. Similar to the Netflix Sandman show, I prefer the comics, of course, but I like what they did with the property creative-wise when they adapted it to streaming or to TV. So Liv cleverly uses her newfound job as a mortician to eat brains, to snack on brains. But in so doing, she discovers an ability she has. When she snacks on these brains, she gets a side order of the deceased's memories and sometimes, well, traits or talents. So it's kind of like inheriting a pinch of, let's say, culinary skills from a chef, or maybe picking up a spattering of art history from a museum curator. So it's a buffet of skills that are served up with a side of scrambled brains, usually in a salad, which she seems to prefer. So Liv uses this newfound abilities. Well, I mean, they're all temporary. They're never permanent, but she uses them to help solve the murders of those she's dined on. So she's kind of like a zombie detective, a little bit like Sherlock Holmes with some Dawn of the Dead thrown in there. So if you're up for some horror, mystery, dark comedy, all served with a side of brains, iZombie is definitely worth sinking your teeth into. So, yeah, who knew being undead could be so lively, at least in Liv's case. So, all right, we'll move on to number 13. All right, this is someone who'll definitely knock your socks off, listeners, because she's a firecracker, and she is one of the main characters of one of my favorite Vertigo series of all time, DC Comics' Preacher, from Garth Ennis and Steve Dillon, and you know by now who she is, I guess, Tulip O'Hare. Tulip O'Hare, the lover of Jesse Custer. And she also had a fantastic character portrayal in the series Preacher from Amazon, if I'm not mistaken. Also enjoyed that. Not as great as the comic, but a fantastic interpretation of the character of Tulip over there. Still, I prefer the comic book version because it's the original, and I fell in love with her when I read the series. All right, so masterminded by the creative genius of Garth Ennis and Steve Dillon, as we've mentioned, Tulip, she's one third of this unique trio that includes her ex-beau, Jesse Custer, the eponymous preacher who has the voice of God, and the Irish vampire known as Cassidy, their psychic. And this motley crew, of course, they're not just road tripping around the country. They're on a divine mission to literally apprehend God, who seems to have taken an extended leave or leave of absence. He's AWOL from heaven, basically. So it's an epic out-of-office adventure. They trek all over the states, and it's fantastic to behold. So Tulip, as a character, she's this kind of a gun-toting badass. She's got this unyielding spirit. She never gives up. She's suffered. She's been through hell. Literally, she's died a couple of times, resurrected, well, once. And she is just a normal woman without any supernatural abilities, unlike Jesse and Cassidy. And she still manages to beat back these sinister entities and cults and all kinds of manner of reprehensible evil that confronts her in this series. So, of course, her journey is full of dark humor as well, which Garth Ennis is known for as a writer. And it proves that in a world gone mad, I think sometimes the only thing that makes sense is to just buckle up and enjoy the ride. And Tulip seems to be that kind of character. So don't expect any, you know, PTSD from this lady, folks. She is tough as nails. So unrealistic in that case. But it's fiction, so, you know, that's why we're here, to read it. It's not something that I want to equate with reality necessarily. So if you're up for a divine road trip with a trigger-happy heroine, then Preacher is the series for you. All right, so moving along, we're on to number 12 now. And standing at number 12 is another Western supernatural character. If you could say Tulip O'Hare was a type of modern Western type of character, then this character is a classic Western type of female character. And this is a lady, a sharpshooting heroine from a series by Cullen Bunn over at Oni Press, if I believe my memory serves me correctly. That is where the series was published, and it's one of my favorite horror-themed series of all time. This is a supernatural Wild West series called The Sixth Gun, and the character in question is the Spitfire, known as Becky Moncrief. All right, so Becky, definitely not your typical cowgirl. She's the reluctant holder of one, or should I say wielder? That sounds like a better word, right, doesn't it? The reluctant wielder of one of the six most powerful weapons in the universe. So this being no ordinary six shooter, this is the sixth gun, folks. And Becky's journey, penned by, like I said, Cullen and Brian Hurt as the artist, is an explosive mix of mystic relics, undead horrors, high-stakes shootouts, that kind of thing. And she's thrust into this world of dark magic and sinister sorcerers by her father. And her story's all about survival, grit, the struggle to keep this apocalyptic artillery out of the wrong hands. And it's a joy. It's a grand old ride, so worth reading. And I definitely count Becky as among my favorite female horror comic characters. Remember, the list is not ranked, so if it was ranked, she would probably be higher. All right, so Becky at number 12. Number 11. This is another supernatural sleuth. She's a lady who's a witchy detective, I describe her as, and her name is Rowan Black. This is Rowan Black from the Image Comics series Black Magic, created by Nicholas Scott and writer Greg Rucka. And if you know Nicholas Scott, you know her art is absolutely jaw-dropping on characters such as Wonder Woman and the Titans of recent years. But she, boy, can she draw horror. So, Rowan Black, fantastic character. So, what is the story about? Well, this spins a web of intrigue and enchantment here, folks. By day, Rowan is a detective for the Portsmouth PD. She cracks cases by day, but by night, she's conjuring up spells and navigating this labyrinth of modern witchcraft featured in this universe. So it's kind of gothic noir, I'd say, maybe magic realism. There's ancient rituals, there's gritty detective work, all mixed in one wondrous blend. And I love Rowan Black. It's just possibly because of the art, because I'm so in love with Nicholas Scott's art. But Rowan isn't just your average witch. She's definitely singular. She stands out, not only because of her strength as a character, but also because of her sheer power and this legacy that she's been saddled with. So a story that sticks with you once you've read it, and I would recommend it. So that's Rowan Black at number 11. Moving on to number 10. Okay, I'll introduce this character by saying lights, camera, action. Because this is a wannabe starlet turned sanguine, a fiend, if we can describe her like that. She is possibly my second favorite female vampire in comics. Yeah, I think that's fair. So she's the leading lady of a series from Vertigo as well called American Vampire, and her name is Pearl Jones. Yeah, so she's been putting a fresh bite into the vampire genre for me for the last decade or more. And of course, created by possibly one of the best modern comic book writers, Scott Snyder, and an artist that I love, Raphael Albuquerque. So what is the story here? Well, Pearl's not just any vamp, like I mentioned. She's an American vampire, but what does that mean? That means she's a new breed. A breed of vampire that has evolved from the old European strain and have different characteristics and physical abilities. She is powered by the sun, vulnerable to gold rather than wooden stakes or silver or holy water. She's much stronger, faster, smarter than your average vampire. And she was turned by Skinner Sweet, who's the other main protagonist of the series, one of the possibly most sadistic vampire characters in all of fiction. So Pearl's journey is one of transformation and vengeance. What I love about her is that she was, in the 1920s, she wanted to be a Hollywood starlet. And she was preyed upon by this group of vampires moonlighting as Hollywood producers. So I shouldn't laugh, that's horrible. And ever since then, Pearl's been wreaking bloody vengeance on them for sucking her dry and forcing Skinner Sweet. I guess nobody forced his hand, but he wanted to have an ally in the fight against the old world vampire. So as she lay dying, he turned her into an American vampire. Great story. You gotta read it. One of my ultimate favorites. Yeah, so if you're tired of old vampire tales, sink your teeth into American Vampire and Pearl Jones, my favorite character of that series. So that's it. We're breaking into the top 10, of course, with Pearl Jones at number 10. Now we're on to number 9. And this is a girl from a series that I've fallen in love with in recent years. Also by Cullen Bunn, who wrote The Sixth Gun, and artist Tyler Crook. And the series in question is Harrow County. The character is Emmy Crawford. So, what is Harrow County? Who is Emmy Crawford? Well, in Harrow County, the trees whisper tales of witches, and the woods echo with eerie enchantments. And this is the hometown of our dear little Emmy. So, she's not your average country girl, of course, no. She's on the eve of her 18th birthday when we first meet her. She stumbles upon this chilling revelation that she's got a supernatural connection to the land that goes beyond anything she ever imagined. And guess what? The townsfolk have some rather unsettling plans for her. But she's unfazed by this. She delves deeper into the mysteries of her inheritance, or her birthright, I should say. And with each haunting secret she unravels, her bond with these creatures and or spirits of Harrow County intensifies. So before she knows it, the lines between monster and human blur, and she's stuck in this story filled with witches, ghosts, ghouls. It's kind of poignant coming-of-age narrative, I'd say, intertwined with themes of family and identity. So, very relatable and mesmerizing. Well done, Cullen Bunn and Tyler Crook, for creating such a unique series. Art-wise, story-wise, character-wise, it's really something to behold. And Emmy is at the center of it all. So that's our number 9, Emmy Crawford from Harrow County. Number 8 is a lady that possibly needs no introduction, but I'll attempt to give her one anyway. So let's start by saying this. She will probably ignite your interest. And if you attempt to read her, you'll probably get lit, because this lady is a pyrokinetic powerhouse from one of my favorite teams, well, horror-themed teams in comics, called the BPRD, Bureau for Paranormal Research and Defense. You know who she is by now. This is Liz Sherman. Yeah, Liz Sherman featured in the Hellboy movies, at least the first two, by Del Toro, Guillermo del Toro. A fantastic character in her own right, different from the character presented by Selma Blair in the movies. But I also liked the way she brought Liz to life, though the comic book Liz is quite different. Still, she has the same origin story told in the movies. She tragically burned her family to death as a young child, and discovered and nurtured by the BPRD, and befriended by Hellboy, Abe Sapien, and all of the rest of the BPRD cast. She used her Flameforged powers to, of course, combat the monsters the BPRD so often faces, but her powers are beyond her control, which is not something I remember the character in the movies having to deal with much. But Liz, in the comic books, she takes a sabbatical at one point in time to rediscover herself, briefly becomes a monk, and discovers this Hollow Earth cult who wishes to use her as a furnace or a battery to fuel their machinations to take over the surface world. All of that kind of good stuff that we love from Mike Mignola's Hellboy universe. And Liz Sherman, definitely a character that will spark your fancy. Get it, spark? All right, so Liz, one of my favorites, and she would definitely be higher up on this list if, in fact, this list had a ranking, which it does not, just to remind you all. All right, let's move on. Liz was our number 8, now we're to number 7, and this, well, to appreciate this character, you have to step into a smoky, shadow-laden, noir-type world of a series called Fatale, by writer Ed Brubaker and artist Sean Phillips, who are known for doing crime comics. So this is kind of a mixture of crime and horror, specifically Lovecraftian horror. The best kind, right? Cosmic horror. And just who is this character? Well, this is a lady simply known as Josephine. And Josephine is probably the purest femme fatale on this list. So who is Josephine from the series Fatale? Well, she's a timeless beauty that's been saddled with an ancient curse that gives her immortality and, makes her irresistible to all men, but also ensnares her into this Lovecraftian destiny where she has to be the sacrificial bride to this chthonic god who craves her. And this cult is hunting her across the centuries. She refuses to, of course, wed her intended betrothed. She, at one point in time, decides no more fleeing. She's going to turn the tables on the cult by using her powers given to her as the chosen of this chthonic entity against these cultists. So she's enigmatic. She's immortal. And she navigate stories that blends noir with cosmic horror. And this series was published by Image Comics. So it's a beautiful series, beautiful art by Sean Phillips, and worth reading, definitely. And it's similar to American Vampire, where the character of Josephine sort of travels or navigates through different eras from the 1950s to the modern day, or even earlier from the medieval period, where she saw her genesis. And I love that. I love these different period stories that are told throughout the story arc as it progresses. So Jo, as she's known affectionately by the men who often fawn over her in these tales, Josephine. Jo is a fascinating character of the female fatale archetype that we're discussing, but with a supernatural twist, of course. All right, so that's our number 7, Josephine from Fatale. Now, number 6. Well, what can I say about this lady? She's hailing from manga. That's right, from Japan. She's an immortal siren, drives men to madness, murder. She drives them to morbid obsession, all of that kind of good thing. And she's a beguiling beauty, a creation of the greatest horror manga artist of all time, Junji Ito. And the lady we're talking about is, of course, Tomie, or Tomie. I've heard it pronounced, but I just call her Tomie. All right, so Tomie, who is this a girl from this disturbing, very disturbing, if you know Junji Ito's tales, truly dark tales. Well, she is a face that will make you die, or worse, if you attempt to destroy her, you'll only discover that she cannot be killed. She regenerates even the smallest piece of herself, if necessary. She is eternal as the horror she embodies, really. So her stories are kind of a macabre mosaic of jealousy, obsession, the grotesque, certainly, with Junji Ito at the helm. And she's a cornerstone of Ito's horror empire. I think that's fair to say. Tomi, she's the nightmare that sort of walks in beauty. I think she symbolizes sort of the abyss that gazes back into you once you gaze at her beauty. So she first appeared, I think this was Ito's debut work, Tomi. Yes, I'm pretty sure that's accurate. So she first appears as this young woman who drives those around her to madness. And then she gets killed and she comes back time and time again, either at the end of the story or in new stories. So this chilling blend of beauty, horror, and the grotesque, which is a nice flavor for us horror fanatics, I'd say. All right, so you got to read Tomi if you haven't yet, but I'm sure most of you already have. Just reread it, because it is eminently rereadable, even if you just look at the art, gush over the art. So that's Tomi at number 6. Moving on to number 5, we've got Erica Slaughter. I'm not even going to give this girl an introduction, because she certainly needs no introduction. Erica Slaughter, the monster hunting maven from the series Something is Killing the Children by James Tynion IV and artist Werther Dalhedra. All right, so she's a recent favorite of mine. I haven't been reading this series via the monthlies. I've been waiting to collect the trades. And every time a new trade comes out, I'm blown away again by how stunning this series is, how wonderful this mythology has become. So Erica Slaughter, the main character of this series, with her trusty blade, her horrific mask that she wears, and her membership in this unique and enigmatic Order of St. George. Oh, I should also mention her badass martial arts skills. She cuts through monstrous flesh and sinews alike. So she's kind of like the boogeyman's boogeyman, hunting these monsters that prey upon the human race, especially that prey upon children, as the first story arc attests. And she's draped in this cloak of mystery. If your bedtime stories were missing this vanquisher of vile supernatural vermin, then I guess Erica Slaughter is for you. You'll enjoy reading her. So Boom Studios is the publisher of Something is Killing the Children. And Erica is definitely a character that deserves a top 5 spot. Although I should again say, I'm not really ranking them. I'm not actually sure where I would rank all these ladies. I know that the last girl on this list that we discussed, she's my ultimate favorite, but I can't really segment the others into or order them into the proper countdown for you folks. So excuse that, please, listeners. But Erica, definitely a recent favorite and possibly poised to become an ultimate favorite, who knows, of mine. So that's Erica Slaughter from Something is Killing the Children. And I'm looking forward to reading lots more about her. All right, coming in at number 5, we've got a lady whispering her way to us through the Southern Gothic swamps. She's this albino angel of death with a divine mission to dispatch demons back to their fiery pits. So she's our number 4. And she was created by Caitlin R. Kiernan and brought to life in the pages of Alabaster Wolves by Dark Horse Comics. Who is she? Dancy Flammarion. Another recent favorite of mine. Dancy Flammarion. She's this lethal little girl with a sword in hand. She's got this spectral menagerie of otherworldly guides. She walks this type of lonely road between the line of savior and slayer, And she's not just battling monsters, she's also wrestling with her own faith and the darkness inside her. So it's a wonderful series if you're looking for character development or just being, you know, presented with a truly unique character. She looks delicate, if we were talking about her appearance now, because of her albinism, kind of like a female, younger version of Michael Moorcock's Elric character. But she's a fierce warrior. She's guided by angels, and her mission is to purge the earth of demons. So her story is one of divine vengeance, really, as she travels the southern United States mostly and encounters all manner of creepy creatures that grapples with her and makes her doubt her faith and purpose at times. So Dancy's story is a southern gothic tale. Lots of dark fantasy, supernatural menaces lurking in every shadow. And if that's for you, you got to read it. It's unique, and she's a compelling character for sure. So Dancy is our number four. Moving on to number three. We've got... Okay, this is a lady that I've loved for a long time, nigh on two decades. And I think I read... Or reread her comic books too much, though. So there was a period of time where I sort of fell off of the series and stopped reading it. But I've since gone back to it and reread all my old omnibi collecting these tales, and I've relearned my love for her, or fallen in love with her again. And this is, well, let's give her an introduction. She's a slasher, slaying siren, a goth glam, grim reaper. I think you'd call her. She kills gruesome ghouls for a living with a baseball bat, when she's been doing so ever since 2004. And she comes to us courtesy of writer Tim Seeley and Devil's Due Publishing. And who is she? Well, this is Cassie Hack, folks. Cassie Hack, the Slayer of Slashers. So Cassie, definitely a singular horror heroine. She's a survivor. She's, you know, like a final girl. She's turned into a hunter of monsters, of slashers, of serial killers, of psychopaths. She has a personal vendetta against them, and she'll never rest until she's sated her bloodlust for these sickos who are, you know, mutilating people across America. And she has, of course, her trusty sidekick Vlad with her, who's this giant hulking bruiser. I think Cassie's the main character. She's where it's at. So she's kind of like Buffy the Vampire Slayer, but, you know, it's more of a therapy session with chainsaws than just Buffy's straightforward vampire killing shenanigans. So Cassie, she has a tragic past, of course. She was the victim, or the intended victim, of the Lunch Lady. Well, you know, at one point in time, she had to kill her own mother. It's a fantastic origin story that leads her into becoming this relentless hunter of these slashers. And sometimes it's not just slashers. I mean, it's all types of archetypal horror characters featured in these stories that go up against Cassie and Vlad, usually accompanied by fantastic art. And Tim Seeley, a writer that, in my mind, very rarely misses when it comes to plot, storytelling, and cohesive narrative. So definitely worthy of a spot high up on the list here, Cassie Hack from Hack Slash, the series. All right, so we're moving to the final two. And at number two, we've got a character that I've loved even before she became horror-centric. I've always been a fan of her. I never watched her old TV show in the 1960s or in the 1970s, as it were. I was a fan because I picked up a batch of old back issues of her, and over the course of one summer, I had at least 30 or, you know, 30 to 35 maybe of these issues. I can't really remember, but it was a lot. It was a stack. And I ended up leaving them, you know, at the place we went vacationing. So I never saw them again. But over the course of these 2 months that we were vacationing during the summer, when I was, I don't know how old I was, maybe 10 or 11, I had picked up this giant stack of these old back issues. And who is this girl that I'm discussing? Well, the reason I'm discussing her, I have to explain, is because she recently transitioned into more horror-centric comics, but she's always had the potential to be a horror character. But this is a character that started off in Archie Comics, and she also has her own series, if I'm not mistaken, on Netflix as well, which I watched, but it wasn't for me, unfortunately. But this is the character of Sabrina Spellman from The Chilling Adventures of Sabrina. And I read the old Archie comics featuring Sabrina, loved her, but not because she was a horror character. Then when Archie Comics announced their horror line with, you know, the zombie series with Jughead as the werewolf, I was through, you know, over the moon. And then finally, when it came to The Chilling Adventures of Sabrina, I couldn't believe it. I was so lucky to read her as a horror-centric character, and the series predictably killed it. It was great. So Sabrina, the teenage witch, in the series The Chilling Adventures of Sabrina from Archie Horror, she has to deal with, well, all kinds of frightening occult drama. So she's kind of like a mix of horror, teenage angst, boyfriend issues, and witchy woes. Fantastically presented by Archie Comics here. And I can't get enough of Sabrina's series. I wish that they had continued it indefinitely. They didn't, and that's why I, you know, moved over to the TV show. It didn't do it for me, sadly, but still had some good moments. So Sabrina Spellman from the series The Chilling Adventures of Sabrina. You gotta read it if you haven't, because it's definitely worth it. And it's not at all for people with delicate sensibilities. This is satanic cults, human sacrifice through the wazoo. Trust me on this, you'll love it, if that's your kind of thing. All right, so now we get to our number one on the list, folks. And if you know me by now, you know who this is. You definitely would have guessed who I would put as the number one horror-centric female character of all time. And I would go so far as to say that if I do rank them, then definitely she will claim the top spot 10 out of 10 times. And this is, of course, the extraterrestrial enchantress from the Warren magazines and now over at Dynamite Entertainment. This is Queen of Vampires, I'd say, hailing from the planet Draculon, where rivers run red with blood. And of course, this is Vampirella, my absolutely favorite female character in comic books, possibly my favorite comic book character of all time, even more so than Swamp Thing. I think I would say that Vampirella is the best of the best for me. So, of course, like we mentioned, published in 1969, first published by Warren Publishing and then later by Dynamite Entertainment. And she's still going strong today with lots of series, which are all excellent. Artists over the centuries have loved drawing her because she's so unique, not just because of her beauty and her sultry nature and how alluring she is and how just plain sexy she appears, but also because she presents a type of female power which cannot be controlled, which needs freedom to thrive, and which demands freedom, in fact. And that's why I love her, because she stands alone. She's independent of others' help or assistance. She doesn't really need that, although she does have a strong supporting cast. She is always at the center of all the events in every single issue featuring her, unless she appears as the horror host, which was her main role in the early Warren magazine issues. So created by Forrest J. Ackerman and costume designer and comic book artist in her own right, Trina Robbins, and with a stunning cover by Frank Frazetta gracing her first magazine issue. She came from her home planet Draculon, which was experiencing a drought of blood from the blood rivers due to their dying binary stars. And she hopped on a spaceship to Earth to quench her thirst and ended up fighting monsters and evildoers on humanity's behalf, but still sating her thirst every now and then, snacking on some of the odd human here and there. So she's immune to the usual vampire weaknesses, being an alien. She's immune to sunlight, garlic, holy symbols, all of that. She is immensely strong, fast, intelligent, capable of regeneration, hard to kill, power of flight due to these massive bat wings that can sprouts from her beautiful shoulder blades. Wow, how could you not love this character? And over the years, her origin story has seen different versions, though. I have to mention that. From being an alien to then being the daughter of Lilith. And then, you know, but her mission has always stayed the same. She's trying to rid the Earth of evil monsters, sometimes evil vampires. And she's gone up against some truly fearsome foes. The Blood Red Queen, this enemy of hers called Hemorrhage. Even Dracula himself at one point in time. So she's been on this quest to discover her true origins lately, and she's learning that she is the first of a new breed of vampire, evolved for the new millennium. I don't mind that they're tweaking her origin. I just love seeing her in print, and the character is still consistent, and that's what I enjoy about reading her in her modern iterations. Well, there you have it, folks. That brings us to the end of our list. You can go over to darklongbox.com where you can check out our blog post based off of this episode, where I'll be posting some fantastic art to titillate you and to hold your interest, hopefully. And you can find us at Dark Longbox on Twitter, or should I say X, and on Instagram and on Blue Sky. And please interact with us over there. Also, remember to leave some comments on the blog, subscribe to our newsletter of darkness for monthly free horror content delivered straight to your very own inbox of darkness. And with that, I'd say goodnight and farewell. Keep it creepy, listeners, and thanks again for tuning in to LOD, the Long Box of Darkness. Until next time, I'll see you in your nightmares. Bye-bye.